There we go. There we go. All right. So now we're being recorded so we can get started. I want to welcome everybody to the March LHON Live conference call. My name is Maria Johnson and I'm one of the co-hosts, and we have one other co-host on with us tonight, and that's Jessica. Can you say hello?
Hi, everyone.
She's sick. She doesn't usually sound like that. So, but, you know, I'm thankful for her to get on the line, even though she's not feeling so well. And Andy Marks is our other co-host, and he may join us later, but hopefully if he does, he'll say hello. So, anyway, to talk a little bit about the call, to take just a few minutes, this call was started 2.5 years ago, and it was started because we wanted another way to connect with folks in the community. Sure, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's, you know, phone calls and text messages, but to get a group on the line, we thought would be a great way to discuss issues, to maybe have speakers, to get to know other people from other parts of the country, all on one call. And this conference call was born because of those ideas. So we do enjoy having this call with you every month, and it's for anybody in the community, for anyone who's affected, carriers, relatives, friends. Anybody is welcome to be on this call. And the key word, like it says on the logo, it is your call. So feel free to speak up when it's appropriate, and feel free just to sit back and listen. It always has some great information, good conversation, and, you know, it's definitely worth your time if you're able to make these calls every month. Now, some of the things we don't discuss medical information, we don't discuss religion, politics, you know, healthcare, you know, or clinical trials. We leave those to the professionals. We leave any medical advice to your own doctors. So we really don't get into that. And if it comes up, I will step in and redirect the question or the time of the call. So with that said, we do have a wonderful guest speaker tonight. His name is Adrian Broca, and he lives here in California. He is a long-distance runner, and he was affected when he was 18. And what I'm going to do right now before I, you know, have him start speaking, I am going to mute the call, although you guys are being very quiet, which is very nice. But just in case somebody gets on and there's a barking dog or somebody's making dinner, I'm going to go ahead and mute the call. And Adrian, after I mute the call, I need you to press *7, okay? And that will unmute your line. Okay, you got that? Okay, so it's going to be, so I'm going to mute the call first. So hold on. Let me mute it. Oops. Wait. Hold on. Pound.
The conference has been muted.
Okay. Okay, Adrian, if you can press *7, it will unmute you, and then it'll just be you and I that are able to speak. Let me know when you're on. Hopefully he's managing that. *7, Adrian. Adrian? Okay. Okay, maybe he's having a hard time doing that. Let's see.
The conference has been unmuted.
Okay,
Adrian?
Sorry about that. It must be the voiceover on my phone because I kept pressing *7 and nothing happened.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, so I'm going to, let's try this again, okay? Are you okay to just try it again?
I mean, I don't think anything's going to change on my end. So I think we're going to be okay.
Okay. All right. Well, if we start to hear a lot of noise and things like that, just to keep in mind, I may interrupt you to have other people, kind of be quiet. But if all of you could, maybe some of us and some of you could do this. If you could *6, the listeners, if you could *6, that will mute your phone if you you know, if you're able to do that on your phone at all, star six. So, you know, if you're on VoiceOver, you got to double tap all that stuff. So star six will mute your phones, and that may help with some of the background noise, okay? But again, as you guys may know in the past, I don't hesitate to jump in and start scolding you all. So anyway,
okay, so
Kathleen, stop.
Yes.
Don't talk. Okay. All right, like I said, I'll jump in. All right, okay, so let's start now. All right, Adrian Broca. Like I said, I already gave an introduction. See, there we go.
Yeah,
my dog. See? If someone has a dog barking in the background, could you star six your phone? Thank you.
It's not me.
Okay. So, Adrian, why don't you take us back to when you were first diagnosed? I know your story may be a little different than some because you also had a younger brother who was diagnosed before you. So take us back to how this all started for you.
All right, so just wanted to start by saying thank you for having me on the call, and it's an honor and a pleasure, and I'm a big fan of your blogs and follow you on Facebook. So
awesome. Well, glad you could do it.
Yeah, I wanted to get that out of the way. So, yeah, I was 18 years old, and I guess my story is very similar to everyone, well, a lot of everyone who's been affected by LHON, who's joining us today. I guess the only difference would be that, yeah, my brother was affected about 3.5 to 4 years before I was, and that was a really eye-opening experience for them, the punt, just because I was able to, even though, yeah, he was going through the struggle for the first time, I was able to help him and also be there for him. And at, little did I know that, yeah, 4 years later, I was going to be affected myself, and that I was going to need his help and guidance to get through it myself.
Mm-hmm.
So you were
a senior in high school, right?
It was the summer of 1994, and I was I was to start my senior year in high school just in the following fall. So I was a couple months away from starting my senior year in high school, and yeah, I was taking summer school, and it was then that I discovered that, yeah, I couldn't see that well out of my left eye, but I didn't really pay any attention to it. I just figured, oh, I'm going to finish summer school and then, yeah, go see an optometrist or an ophthalmologist and just get eyeglasses prescribed and I'd be okay. Then, it wasn't really that long I guess it was another month, and then my right eye also, the eyesight on my right eye also deteriorated to the point where, and I started to pay more attention to that and, finished summer school. And then I had to go see the eye doctor right away. And I had a denial mechanism where I hadn't associated it with anything my brother had gone through and what he had been diagnosed with. And I was in the back of my mind hoping that, mine was something entirely different and that mine was able to be fixed, and it turned out it wasn't. And, it was, at least another month of seeing specialists and being referred from one doctor to another, and that I finally, I got the diagnosis that, not only was I not going to regain the eyesight on my left eye, but I was also going to lose the one on my right eye. And, that it was, through my brother they made the connection and, figured that I was also affected by LHON.
Yeah.
And, here we are, 22 and a half years later.
Yeah. How did knowing that that was already in your family, knowing what your brother had gone through, when you were told that, what was going through your mind? Because a lot of folks, you know, who are diagnosed for the first time, like your brother or the first one in the family, you know, you don't really know what's going to happen, but you knew what was going to happen. And, you know, how did you deal with that as an 18-year-old, knowing you were going to lose vision in the other eye very rapidly?
I mean, it wasn't, I mean, I think at first it was still devastating because there's nothing like, yeah, having to go through it yourself and getting that diagnosis. Yeah, it feels like you're getting a death sentence that, you know, life is never going to be the same, that all your dreams go out the window and you're not ever going to amount to anything. But it was, yeah, later on after dealing with my depression and just, you know, hitting rock bottom that I had hope on, yeah, seeing my brother and being able to see what he had already done with a little bit of sight that he, and I guess still don't, I mean, we must have the same gene mutation, but in, yeah, he himself was able, lost a lot of his, all of his central vision and some of his peripheral vision, but after some steroid treatment and a few months later, he was able to regain most of his peripheral vision back.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that I was clinging on to, even after I had lost most of my peripheral vision. I was hoping, okay, so maybe if that happened with him, I can have that hope that I'm gonna be as lucky. Unfortunately, I wasn't, and I don't know if it was also. Given that my brother had already gone through, the doctors had already given him the steroid treatment and felt like, yeah, we tried that on him. We weren't able to help him regain his sight fully. He did recover some, but with me, they just felt like, okay, yeah, we know what you're affected by. There's no cure. There's no treatment. And yeah, they just pretty much referred me to the, my local Braille Institute, and so he told me good luck. I mean, so I didn't have the benefit of them trying to figure out what it was or trying to see what treatments could make any improvements. So
sure. But, now, after your senior year in high school, you had mentioned on a previous phone call that we had that you actually were put into another school for visually impaired. And along with not only your schooling, but you learned other things to help you as a visually impaired young man. What was that like?
No, so at the time I had to, once I was diagnosed as legally blind and given the diagnosis of, losing most of my sight, I had to transfer to another school, which was actually my younger brother's school. And he was able to help me once I was there, but they were able to help me with a lab where I had all the technology available to help me do my homework and to get through my coursework. He also took mobility lessons pretty much through the first half of the year, and also I benefited from learning how to read in type rail, and also what else? Mobility training. Oh, and it was also there that I joined the cross country team and was able to, for at least that period, forget all about being visually impaired. And it was a lot of fun to be able to join with my brother and the cross country team that he was part of already.
And that was kind of, now had you done any kind of track or running previous to that?
No, I mean, that's the irony that before that I was kind of a weekend warrior where I would just feel like, going for a 16 mile run, and I would just try to go as far as I could, and then whenever my legs couldn't move anymore, I would have to find a payphone and call my parents to come and pick me up. This was long before Uber or Lyft, but
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it was just something that I enjoyed doing. It was a lot of fun to push my body to the limit and see how far I could go. But even though I wasn't, I didn't consider myself an athlete or dedicating any time to training. And I always dedicated more time at school to trying to get the best grades I could, because it was my goal to get into a good university and be able to, become a marine biologist. So I felt that I couldn't, waste any time with any athletics. I tried out for the wrestling team once, and a couple of friends invited me to try out for the track team, but I never took them up on it. And it was, I guess, looking back, it's something that I should have done, because, we never know how much time
you never know.
Really have left.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the truth? And so you graduated high school through this other school. And so let's take us to, to deal with a lot of the depression and what was going on. And you kind of thought, maybe I could run. Running is something that maybe I could do. You started running, and you were running by yourself, right? You were running around the streets of your neighborhood, and I think you told me who your first guides were. And so can you tell us how you got started kind of doing more of the running, not just for the school, but now you're on your own?
Right. It was totally different. And so it was, came in stages. At first, I joined the cross-country team, and I still had most of my peripheral vision, so I was able to follow the runners ahead of me and everyone around me, and not get lost on the training runs or even out on the cross country courses. I was able to follow everyone and seem pretty much normal. But I think it was a couple months later that my peripheral vision became blurry and foggy at the same time, so I was having trouble, training with the team and also getting lost on the cross-country meets. And it was just a really hard time, because here I thought I still had this peripheral vision to be able to enjoy something I love doing, and then it was kind of taken away from me. So after that, I was really depressed, and I didn't run for at least a couple of years. It wasn't until a year after I graduated high school that I began focusing more on the things I could still do instead of those that I couldn't. And I began slowly wandering around my neighborhood and walking on the sidewalks and figuring out what obstacles look like now that I could barely see them. And slowly started jogging on the sidewalks and then by the curb, just to try to avoid as many obstacles as I could. And then by then my younger sisters were in their school's cross country and track teams, and they would ask me to join them on their training runs. And they were actually my first guide, so they would tell me when obstacles were on my way and to slow down or to go one way or another and avoid them. And So that was one way of regaining that joy of running that I hadn't had for a couple of years before I had to quit the cross country team and kind of give up all hope. But and then I had this ability to train short distances on my own and not run into as many things as I did at the beginning. But I still didn't see myself running any 5 or 10K races, just because those are fast-paced, and also those courses have way too many turns on them, and I thought I'd be running into a lot of trouble trying to stay on that kind of race on that kind of course. And so I was kind of limited to just training for the joy and fitness of it, but I still had that competitive edge of being out there and running competitively. I just didn't know what kind of event I could
sure.
do. So,
you, I know that your first first marathon was the LA Marathon, and how did you come upon that as something you wanted to do? Obviously, being more long distance, not the 5K, 10K that has a lot of turns and different things like that. What was the bug that kind of got you to say, I want to try that marathon, let me see if I can do this?
Yes, there was one rainy morning in the year 2000 that I turned on my TV set at home, and I was tuned into the LA Marathon race broadcast, and at first I didn't know what kind of race they were running, but then they described, yeah, that it was a 26.2-mile race, and all the streets around town were, closed off to all traffic, and there were around 20,000 people running that race, and you were allowed up to 6 or 7 hours to finish, and it was like, oh, that's a race that I need. I mean, to not worry about obstacles, traffic, plenty of people to follow, and long distances have always been my strength. So I just decided that right then and there that, I was going to run my first LA Marathon the following year, and I kind of trained for it, but I wasn't fully prepared, but I was, proud of myself to be at the starting line of the 2001 LA Marathon.
Now, you didn't have a guide for that race, and actually for the next handful of races, you didn't use a guide. What did you do to keep yourself on pace and to get through those races without having, probably not a lot of people knowing you're visually impaired, but just keeping up, to get through the race and stay on track?
Even though I was, just following blurry shapes, and depending on the lighting that day, I was able to see the lanes in the middle of the road that I could follow. But then, and as I first, began running marathons, I had plenty of people ahead of me that I could follow. But then as I began getting better, improving my training, and began getting more fit and also faster, I found that I was running pretty much the whole second half of the race alone for long stretches of the race, and it was then that I was getting lost on when the turns on the course came up. I wouldn't know which way to go, and I would have to stop and ask people along the course for directions, or also have to wait for slower runners to catch up to me to then follow them. So it was a lot of stop and go and a lot of wasting time, and it was really frustrating. And so I ran, those first at least five or six LA, no, let me see, at least my first four LA marathons, and then another two or three longish marathons on my own. And it wasn't until but one really hard LA marathon that I realized that I wasn't just putting my times in jeopardy by running without a guide, but also it was that one time I was suffering from heat stroke. I was really dehydrated because I was missing all the aid station. I wasn't getting the water that I needed, and it was just a really, really. I had an awful time finishing that race. So it was then that I decided and realized that if I was going to realize my full potential as a visually impaired runner, it was to let everybody know that I needed their help, and to reach out and humble myself and just tell people what my limitations were, and see who was out there to volunteer and help me get through.
I think you told me you actually met your wife at the LA Marathon, is that right?
It was actually in the I joined the looking for guides and friends to run with. I joined the LA Road Runners training program, and they're the official training program of the LA Marathon, back in 2004. And I was running with them for a couple of years, and then I was assigned to my future wife at a story that NBC was featuring, and she was doing public relations for the LA Marathon that year, and that's how we met and, yeah, began. She was also a marathon runner herself, and it was after the race that we kind of developed a friendship, and then I asked her out, and, yeah, here we are.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
Well, you have run, is it 30, well, maybe more, 36 marathons?
Well, I think it's up to 38 now. Yeah. Kind of
38 marathons.
Yeah, go back and start counting.
38 marathons. And you've done L.A., you've done Long Beach, and you've done Boston as well, right? Is there any other marathons that you have your eyes on that you'd like to get off that bucket list?
Yeah, I've done Boston 8 times, L.A. 15 times, Chicago twice, also St. George, which is a fast downhill course where I've done run my fastest marathons, and I ran my PR of 2 hours and 50 minutes there back in 2007. And I would love to run New York and some of the other world majors like London, Berlin, and Tokyo. But, yeah, those are way in the future. But
Well, you've also added I'll back up. You and I, Adrian, were actually going to meet last October at the Tri Challenge that's held here in San Diego, and I was going to be doing the tandem leg on a triathlon, but I had knee surgery and I wasn't recovered enough, so we weren't able to meet. But you did do the Tri Challenge, which is it's sponsored by CAF, Challenge Athletes Foundation. And I think that was your first taste of a triathlon. Am I right on that one?
Yes, it was. And it all started back in 2014 when I took CAF swim clinic here in the Palisades, which is really close to where I live. And it was here then that I got my toes in the water and realized, that this was a sport. I didn't know how to swim. I could tread water and get around a pool without drowning. But it was in the swimming clinic that they taught me the basics of swimming, and I was really, it piqued my interest, and I wanted to get to know more of the sport. And we got taking swimming lessons at the YMCA, and also by following other blind athletes, I knew there were many triathletes out there with many physical impediments accomplishing amazing things. So it was through following one of our fellow LHON athletes, Matt Oliver, that I found out about the CAF Triathlon Challenge, and it was, something that, just like the LA Marathon, I set my eye on, and I set it as a goal for me to train for a triathlon, learn how to swim, and to take on that challenge the following year. So
that's what
we ended up doing last year.
Mm-hmm. That says a lot there. You weren't even a real swimmer. You didn't have that as one of your athletic skills. And you just, it took just a couple of years ago, learned how, and, you've already put it to use in your athletics. So that's awesome. That's so great. What are you training for now, Adrian? What's your next big event?
Put the triathlons on hold for now. I'm waiting to hear from CAF on a grant to get a tandem bike so I can do more training out there, and also to be able to do more, compete in more local triathlons without having to worry where I'm going to be getting a tandem bike from. But in the meantime, I'm training to run my 9th Boston Marathon in just 6 weeks, and I'm really looking forward to that. And also, my long-term goal for next year is to complete my first Ironman triathlon. So that would be next.
That's the big one.
And again, I'm following on the footsteps of fellow LHON.
Matt
Oliver, who's already done it, and it's inspired me to take on that challenge and to if he was able to do it, then I figure I can I can do it myself.
Well, and that's one of the things that I love about in this community is that we are always inspiring each other. And, you know, you are a fellow LHLer, inspiring you. And you may be inspiring somebody out there who, you know, the running, but even you just talked about your swimming. You can swim, when you're legally blind. I know other swimmers as well. And, it can be done. And, triathlons, I know you also swim in oceans and rivers and lakes and other big bodies of water. So it's not just pool swim that you had to get down. You had to be able to, swim in rough water and things like that. It's a little more it can be a little more difficult than just swimming in the pool. So, I applaud you on that accomplishment. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions, Adrian. What advice would you give to any of the listeners or anyone that might listen to this call after it's recorded who want to start running as a visually impaired runner? Do you have any, even just a small bit of advice for anyone out there?
I mean, I think for me, running was the thing that really helped me overcome my depression. And it wasn't easy. I mean, I had to venture out there and just put my faith in God and hope that I didn't get hurt too badly. So I had to do a lot of experimenting, and it was a lot of trial and error to figure out which was the best way to go out there and run and not get hurt. So eventually it was relying on guides and being able to ask people for help, mainly on races, just because I am able to train on my own and not into get into too much trouble doing so. Being able to put things on a scale and figure out that you're the benefits of going out there and trying new things is far outweigh the drawbacks of falling down or crashing into one or two things and quitting before you even get started. So it's just overcoming that fear of the unknown or getting hurt not too badly, and also just be able to ask people around you for help, mainly your family and friends.
Yeah. Well, you said, is that you never had been on the running and track team and cross country, and, you didn't know that was going to become, your passion. And if you didn't, put that, in the front of your mind on things to do because you realized you could do it, you wouldn't be where you are now. So again, like you said, you just don't know until you start trying new things. Kind of going off the running subject here a little bit, what kind of assistive technology do you use, Adrian? What are some of the tools you use on a daily or basis or, just have in your home that you find helps you out the most?
I guess the most basic one is the collapsible white cane that I used to get around my neighborhood, and it's not because I couldn't get around without it safely. I mean, I'm still able to not, fall out. I'm totally blind at night, and if it's too dark, or sometimes in the summer, if it's too bright outside, I can't really see anything. But I do carry it more as an identification tool. It just lets people know, that I'm not able to.
Right.
To see them, and that if I look like I'm lost out there, they're they can lend me a hand and help me figure out which way I'm going, but and also not run me over if I'm crossing while the light is yellow or so. And also carry my collapsible white cane with me at the end of with me on the marathon, just because I'm able to extend that at the last 0.2 of a marathon, and I'll just let people know, yeah, that I'm visually impaired and that I've overcome, yeah, so many obstacles to finish that race,
yeah.
And just that I'm proud to be an inspiration to others out there. And once I finish the race, I use my cane to navigate, yeah, my way out of the finishing area and try to find out, yeah, where my friends and family are.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah,
so that's the most basic one. I also use this talking GPS handheld device that, I mean, with handheld phones now, or smartphones, you no longer need a separate talking GPS. But I rely on it just because it does have an extended battery life, and it also is just it's easier for me to operate and not rely so much on the phone. But and then I have the iPhone that I use to read my emails, and I use VoiceOver all the time to answer for all kinds of information. At home I use the CCTV to read print materials, and I have some text and JAWS on my laptop. I don't read I don't use JAWS as much because I still like the independence and the feeling of being able to read what's on the screen, even if it's largely magnified. And also I use the color contrast and turn the screen, flip the background to dark and just see the bright letters on the screen.
Right, reverse type. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you for kind of giving us that overview on that. And I appreciate you bringing up the cane because, you know, when people think like, what are some of the things that you use? We automatically go to technology, but it can be the simplest thing like a cane, which, you know, a lot of folks in the community, some use it, some don't. Some always have one with them and use it only when they need it. So, you know, you run full marathons without it. And then, you know, you use it when you need it as well. So thank you for sharing those things as well, Adrian. Well, I'm going to go ahead and open up the call to anyone who might want to talk to Adrian, ask him any questions. You know, he's given us some great story on how he got involved in running and the things he's overcome, and talked about some other little things. But please feel free to unmute your phones at *7, and that will allow you to talk if you muted yourself. And even if you want to just bring up anything else that may be pressing on your mind and you want to get some advice for or maybe have a comment about, we encourage you to bring that up as well. So does anybody have anything they want to say right now to Adrian, or just a general comment about something in the LA Twin community or something that's going on with yourself?
I would like to ask him a question.
Absolutely. Is this Lucy?
This is Lucy. I'm basically just outside of Ottawa, Canada.
Okay, great.
Adrian, I would like to ask you, are you working?
Yeah, that's also one of the advantages of having... when I married my wife, she had her was starting her own dog training and dog walking business, so I kind of married into the business, and that's our family business now. We walk and train dogs, and it's something we both love animals, and it's something that I'm able to do with my limited eyesight. I'm able to go out there and join her on hikes and on the dog training. And also I'm in charge of doing all the accounting, invoicing, and all the paperwork that involves running your own business. So I'm really lucky that way, that I don't have to go out and work for anyone else, but to have that freedom and flexibility of working for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else? I'm impressed that he does the billing and the invoicing. I can barely look up a phone number half the time. That's awesome. I know, but I know we have folks that, you know, are working with spreadsheets every day, you know, in the community, but which I am very impressed by because I'm not that good. But is there anyone else that likes this to, again, you can bring up anything or a question for Adrian.
No, don't be shy, Chris. Yeah, there was one time when I joined the call and I was, too shy to ask a question or to comment on what the, dance speaker had, was trying to express, and I kind of regret not, asking a question or just saying or telling that person how impressed I was from, what they had accomplished. And so if you, there's anything you'd like to ask, don't be shy or afraid to ask.
Imagine running and doing what you do, honestly, because I'm working still, and honestly, I want to quit just because it's so hard and so stressful for me. And so for your accomplishment is really good because, like, my colors are just, like, fading. Like, it's like people say, oh, that's, like, pink, but it's, like, gray, you know? And so you
right.
running and making your long distance, I couldn't do it because I was so lost. Like, so I'm so proud of you. Like, that's a big accomplishment. I mean, I know it's sad because it's like, it's just running, but it is a big deal.
It is a big deal.
I mean, it might not be running for everybody, but if it's riding a bike or if it's swimming or doing any other sport, I mean, just find out how you can do it safely and go out there and try it. I mean, and for me, the running was something I enjoyed doing before I lost my sight, and then I just adapted and found out how to do it the safest way I could and try to get around by first memorizing a route that would be safe, and once I familiarized by walking the route, then I would go out and run it and slowly gain speed and kind of not run into many unexpected obstacles that weren't there today. Before just a few weeks ago, I started on a long run and a training run, and I ended going to a part of the neighborhood that I wasn't too familiar with, and it turned out there was some construction going on that part of the part of the street, and there were they had very concrete barricades out on the bike path that I usually follow, and I had no idea that those barricades were there, so I ended up running full on onto the concrete barricade. Yeah, so I really messed up my knees and ended up messed up and losing a lot of a full week of training. But it's just something that happens, but it's still the benefits and the joy of going out there and feeling free and alive and in control of your body and your everything's going on around you far away. It's the few drawbacks that sometimes you face, but now I know that there's a construction site over there, and I just stay to the part of the neighborhood that I'm familiar with, and I no longer try to get too adventurous if I haven't first walked through that part of town and figure out what's there before I try to go on a training run.
Yeah. You know, you said something in your video, the video Lissa had posted in the email, and I had watched it a few days ago, but you said something, I know I'm not going to get it right, but it was, the true disability is having the negative mindset that you can't do something. And that, it was something to that effect that's the true disability. And I thought that was very, very true. Having that mindset of the negative or I can't really can hold you back from so many things that yourself running and many other people are doing, not just in our, LHMN community, but in the blind community, because we do have, blind the community out there that has things other than LHON. So, you know, it was that is it's very holds true, and I just wanted to point that out. That that was such a great one-liner there in your video. So, anyone else have any other topics that you know you'd like to bring up, or you know, just a few words or any questions about anything that's been kind of going on?
I do. My name is Garb, and my son has just recently been affected. And Adrian, he loves to run, and he runs cross country in his high school. He's in his second year of high school, and he's so much hoping that he can continue to do that. But you had mentioned in your talk that it's very difficult to do the shorter distances, like the meets are all 5Ks. Do you think it would help if he ran the course ahead of time?
I think so, but it's also, I mean, depending on, his teammates and who's running the same kind of pace. I mean, if he's able to, I don't know if he's let, all his coaches and teammates know that, he's visually impaired or that his eyesight is, then I think they'd be, if, he's able to ask him for help, and I think they'd be able to, more than willing to help him out. That's something I wasn't able or willing to do myself, and I found it easier to just altogether quit and not even, ask people for their guidance on out on the course. But knowing what I know now, it's something I should have done and would have made it a much more enjoyable experience to continue running and not even have to go through that, 2 years ago where I never thought I could run again.
Yeah.
So
is
my
it
advice for
is it
him
something
would
where
be
someone,
to,
yeah.
I mean, I would have to be a running mate. I mean, and someone, a friend of his, and someone who's just, willing to say, you know what, we can either use a tether or I'm going to run alongside you and I'm going to let you know what the turns on the course are or if there's rocks or obstacles that we have to go, over or around on the course. But it's something that can definitely be done, and it's by following other athletes who have come after that my own experience with running that I've realized amazing ways of gonna still be competitive out there, just like Chas Davis was able to ask teammates for help and out on the track or out on the cross country courses and just to be able to do it safely and competitively at the same time. So there's definitely ways to keep running and to not give up.
Yes. I'll have to tell him that. Yeah, he's very very upset but wants to make sure that that's the one thing he can still do. And wants to be as independent as possible. So I guess that's the
And this is Maria. What was your name that was just speaking?
My name is Barb, and my son is
Barb.
We live in Connecticut.
And where you? Okay. Well, good. Well, I'm really glad you spoke up, Barb. There are quite a few runners in our community, and I'm sure that any one of them would be more than happy to talk with your son when he's ready to talk, of course.
Right.
When
exactly.
He's ready. Yeah. And, like Adrian, he fell into that time of, I can't run anymore. And it took a couple of years to kind of get back, getting that courage back up and getting out of a sad place. And the same thing happened with Chas Davis. He mentioned Chas Davis, is another runner. He's actually a Paralympian this past, Olympics. And he same thing. He said, I can't do this anymore. And he took all this time off, but then realized he could. Wow. So with these guys, here, to help a young runner not go through that pain of thinking, I can't do what I love to do, is so valuable. So I'm so glad you spoke up, Barb. Thank you for talking.
Yeah,
and, I know that Lissa Poinsineau or, even myself, if you are on Facebook, could connect with either one of us and we could connect you with some of the runners in the group that might have some other advice as well.
Yeah, no, more than happy to talk to him if he wants my phone number and ever wants to just have someone to chat with and talk about
right.
these frustrations with running and how I overcame running into things or still
right, that's
enjoy
terrific.
Running.
Thank
that,
you very much.
That's something that, that I would love to do.
Barb, how old is he in? He's a sophomore, you say?
Yeah, he's 15.
Okay,
no,
Well, great. Well, I'm glad you called.
This is one thing I wanted to mention. I wanted to pick up on something Maria was saying about people inspiring people. And I'm sure I've told this story before, but I just think it's so important, because for me, Adrian is such an important figure in, our family's LHON journey, because I so vividly remember, we were just a couple, 3 months into Jeremy's vision loss, and I was in that desperate bottom of the abyss place and didn't know how we were going to get out. And one of my coworkers brought a Runner's World magazine into the office, and she showed me this, two-page spread in Runner's World magazine, and Adrian was on one side, and another runner, blind runner, was on the other side, and it was just this story about these two amazing blind runners and the things they were doing, and she showed me this story, and literally, I saw the future. I mean, I was like, okay, so Jeremy's not a runner, but he's a golfer. And it put all these ideas in my head of, okay, there's going to be a way and we're going to get him out of this and we're going to get him into some sort of athletic activity that he loves. And maybe someday he'll be featured in, golf magazines, and he was, and maybe he'd be on television for golf, and he was. And all of these ideas literally were all sparking in my head.
Help me learn how to do this, stepmom.
All of these ideas were all sparking in my head as I was seeing this article about Adrian, and nobody would know, he had no idea, of course, that he was inspiring me, that was inspiring Jeremy going, and then I didn't get to connect with Adrian until a few years later, and then got to meet him, not long ago, but I'm just saying, you don't know who you're touching and inspiring until later, but I think it's cool how that works.
It is terrific, and I thank you very much.
And I can't stay downstairs because I'm not going to the hospital.
Right.
I'm going to high school. So,
If you're having a conversation while you're on our call, could you try not to, please? Thank you. Barb, thank you for speaking up. Is there anyone else that has anything they'd like to add in? Again, it could, if you're a parent, if you're affected and you have any advice you'd like to give, maybe some of the people who maybe been affected a little bit longer that are on the call, I'm saying longer than 3 years, say 4 years, 10 years, 40 years. have any advice or like to say anything while you're on the call or not?
No, I was trying to listen to her call, but then there was obviously other stuff going on, so I was trying to listen, but it's just I have my kids and I never know if they're going to get affected or not, and I have to play little games, but the games that I play, I'm like, oh, go grab that green, something, and I can't tell colors. So I'm like, I don't even know how I'm supposed to tell if they can tell. I know that they feel, they feel like it's like they can use it against me. But because they're so young, they're 7 and 8, and so what am I supposed to do? They're not knowing. They feel like they can use it.
Use your blindness?
Yeah, try to say that they have it too.
Oh. Huh. Well, I haven't heard anyone say, or any, I haven't heard of anyone's child saying, I have, I'm blind too, or I can't see.
My list did, but see, I figured it out on my own. I go to Atlanta, of course, and she said, just do a little test. Say, go pick up that whatever color or something, And I didn't have to do it. I literally didn't have to because he said,
well, I'm going to get this blue, green or whatever color thing, and he's taking it to sit down like it was a chair because it was going to my younger son's, like, soccer thing. So he knew what color it was, but he wanted to pretend, like, for a while he could see color. And I feel like it was, like, a thing. He thinks he knows I can't see color good, so he wants to play into that.
Hey, Maria, he's just imitating, I guess. He must be very young.
Well, he's 12. So.
Oh.
Yeah, and you know what? When they're 8 and 12, and you know, it's hard for them that they're also adjusting to their mom having vision loss as well. And you know, they're gonna, you know, either they're gonna, you know, act out, or they're going to, you know, seclude themselves, or they may say, "Well, I can't see either," you know, to get some attention. I don't know. I don't know your children, but I do know that my neuro-ophthalmologist has said he has seen many children that actually come into his office and there's absolutely nothing wrong with them. And it turns out to be it was a psychological issue. And they were either stressed, they were looking for attention, you know, 1, 2, 3, and many other reasons. But, you know, I don't know your kids. I'm not a doctor. But, you know, kids will be kids. Kids will be kids, you know. And I had my... You know, so I don't, you know, don't know what else to say about that, but.
Hey, Maria.
Yeah.
Hey, Maria.
Yeah.
It's Andy. I wanted to let you know I joined a while back, but.
Oh, terrific. That's Andy Marks. That's our other co-host. So thanks, Andy. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Maria.
Oh, so, anyway, well, listen, you know, we can continue this conversation, but it is, you know, has been an hour, and I know it's 6 o'clock here on the West Coast, 8 o'clock there on the West, on the East Coast. Did I say that right? And, so anyway, we like to keep the call to an hour, but we have started to, let the call go a little bit longer. We call it after the call, and this is where we stop recording so that anybody who is new, who maybe didn't feel comfortable speaking up because you knew you were being recorded, that'll be your time to talk if you would like. Adrian said he would hang on the line a little bit longer in case there were some more questions. But what I'm going to do is I am going to stop the recording. But first I wanted to say a couple quick things to close up the call is please mark your calendars. You're starting to see the post for registration for the upcoming LHON conference, which is being held in Alexandria, Virginia. It's the 29th and 30th of June. The 29th is Day on the Hill, and we have a get-together, meet-and-greet Thursday evening, and then we have our LHON conference on Friday from about 8 to 5 p.m. So you don't want to miss it. Hotel reservations can be made, and registration for the conference is now open and available. Those posts have been on the main group, and I'm sure Lisa will be posting them, you know, here on out. So anyway, mark your calendars for that. If you can go, it's awesome. You will meet families and other affected at this conference, and there's a lot of good information. We've got a lot of good topics planned out for the day, and it's going to be great. The other thing is, if you would like to be a speaker or have any comments or ideas for this call, feel free to email us at lhonlive@gmail.com, and we always are checking that to see if, you know, if there's anything we can do to make the call better, or, you know, if you'd like us to get back to you on something. But other than that, our next call is going to be April, and I never look up the date. April 5th. Thank you. It's Wednesday, April 5th. And, of course, we'll promote it so that you won't forget. And Lisa will send out her email blast. But it's the 5th, and it does happen the first Wednesday of every month in case you aren't sure how that goes. Bless you. There's a lot of sneezing tonight. Anyway, so with that said, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording. And if I can get back to this. And I believe it's just star. Hold on. Oops.
Okay, hold on.
It's star two, Maria, if you...
Oh, star two. Oh, star two again. Okay. Okay.
I want to listen to all of those.
Right.
Oh. It didn't do anything. One, two, three. Star...